We're doing the In Yaakov and Brachot, and we're nearing the end of the third chapter. We're on Daf Chaf Dalet, page 104 in the classical In Yaakov's. And we've been discussing that different parts of a woman are constituted as private, as personal, things that shouldn't be revealed. And we discussed the halachic relevance of that, that when those parts are revealed, so it's considered like an immodest scenario, and God doesn't want His name present there, and so one may not make a blessing, one may not learn Torah orally. That's what we discussed last week, and where we're holding now, after we've defined that the thigh is considered a part that's supposed to be covered, and we discussed that a woman's voice, hearing a woman singing, is another thing that's considered something that's personal, that should be between her and her husband, and if someone else hears a woman singing, so it's considered an immodest scenario, and he shouldn't be learning Torah. So here we have to add that there's a halachic leniency, that already 150 years ago or more, the rabbis saw that wherever they went, they heard women singing, so they said that being that we have no choice, just don't be listening to the woman singing and continue your learning, because you have no control. Yeah, you want to ask something?
What are the seniest kind of principles that apply to men? Because it's kind of clear what applies to women.
So that we did last week, sorry. Yeah.
But Rabbi, didn't David, King David, have women singers to sing for him?
They sang for him? Anyway, it says it about King Solomon, but it says he made them. Maybe they were there for his wives. Doesn't say they were for him.
King David, it says his myrmidons used to sing to Shaul. That King David is victorious and Saul got jealous of that?
No, it says that the women used to chant. Doesn't say they chanted it for him. It says they chanted in general. The women used to sing. He heard of it. It doesn't say he heard them. Doesn't say it was in his court. It says the women sang. The women, doesn't say anyone else heard them. Anyways, if women are singing and they're...
Mary was saying after coming back from Egypt, all the women were dancing with the tambourines and singing. God deliver us from.
Okay, you're bringing very, very good questions. Good questions. You're saying, how did Miriam and the women sing? So one opinion says that they just said the first verse. Ashir Lashem Vatan Lahem Miriam, Shiru Lashem Kigoba, Suso Ochvora Mavayam. That's all it says. So the simple answer would be they said one verse. We also have to ask whether chanting a tune with the cantillation notes is considered singing. It seems from the Talmud that a woman could technically read in the Torah. The problem is other issues, but the problem of her singing is that doesn't seem to be called singing. So halachically we would consider that singing, but that needs definition why. And what was Miriam doing? Were they really singing? Were they chanting? This is relevant when you'll take your child to Gan, and then the Ganenet starts chanting with the kids. Modeani, can you stick around or not? Or can a ganenet say it when there are male teachers in the next room and they're going to hear her? So chants generally we're more lenient on, but our class isn't in halacha, so that's not our discussion here. We're learning in Yaakov. Let's continue. When we have a class in halacha, we'll have to discuss all those applications. Amar Rav Sheisha. Now Rav Sheisha teaches us, we're in the last narrow line, Se'al b'isha'uva, hair in a woman, talking about the hair on her head, that's considered something personal and private that should not be uncovered. Shneimar, as the verse says, King Solomon praises in the Song of Songs, he praises Sa'alech Keder Ha'izim. Your hair is soft and fluffy like a flock of goats, like the hair of a flock of goats. Okay. That's an insult. Okay. So hair is considered an erva. Now, on the issue of hair, so... Again, halachically, we've become more lenient over the generations. Firstly, because the custom that we have nowadays is that non-married women keep their hair uncovered, and there's no problem making a bracha next to them. And the second, you have this discernment, so what happens when she becomes married? Why does her hair become an erva? So technically, we say it does. But practically, being that wherever you go, there are women with their hair uncovered, so we're more lenient with regard to hair than anything else. But also, if a person can avoid it, a person should. We prefer not to rely on this leniency, but when necessary, some issue, the area of hair, we are more lenient. We mentioned that this is relevant in a person's own home when he wants to make havdalah, or Kiddush, that the wife should really cover her hair for Avdala and Kiddush. Okay, so that brings us to the conclusion of the discussion of the private, what has to be covered when it comes to the modesty of a woman. And we discussed that from the knee up has to be covered, and we discussed the different opinions about whether from the knee down has to be covered. And we saw that the hair has to be covered, and that hearing a woman sing, those are all things that really are private, that remain between husband and his wife, and that shouldn't be exposed to other people. Now we're going on to a whole new topic. The Talmud tells us, "Hatolet tfilav yitalu lo chayav." If someone hangs his tefillin, he leaves them hanging on a nail or hanging on a hook, so then his life should be hung on a hook. Those who derive different thoughts from the Torah, they can figure things out. They say that this is alluded to by the verse that says, "Vayu chayecha tluim necha mineged." That the verse says in the curses that one's life will be hanging, so to speak, like hanging by a thread. That's a reference to those that hang their tefillin, corresponding to that, God says, will hang their lives. So we're not supposed to hang our tefillin. And here again, in the halacha, it's discussed what does that mean.
Can you hang the bag that it's in on something?
So that's all discussed. That we'll have to leave for our halacha class. I didn't get reviewed. I don't remember.
What about not putting them in their houses? Like, let's say you've got to go to the bathroom or something, you just happen to be there. Do you have to put them into their houses?
Preferably, we wrap up the film. If one goes into the bathroom, preferably they should be wrapped.
Wrap them up, I'm pretty sure you don't need to. I thought, you know, just putting them into the houses or leaving them where they were.
What do you mean? Let's start again.
You can't put them in, they've got like these plastic boxes in them.
Right, and you want to take them into the bathroom with that?
But you can never take them.
No,
you
know.
You're talking about leaving them out of the bathroom.
Leaving them out.
Ah,
you
okay.
Fine. You just put them down and come back afterwards.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
Now, what if you don't wrap them up? Or what if you don't twist, like when you close it up? What if you like? Because I never got the hang. Like I see people, they're very skillful at wrapping their filling back up. You know, like and it's very neat and tidy. When I do it,
bring it at the end of the class. I'll show you how to do it. At the end of the next class.
Okay.
So what you say, you're allowed to just leave them like that without putting them into the box?
Yeah, it's preferable to put them in the box.
Isn't there like a lot about that?
I mean, but putting them in their box?
Okay. They always send boxes.
I don't know about that. I don't remember it saying anywhere. But could be I forgot. I don't remember that... you would have to, meaning if you want to leave your tefillin revealed, it's a bad idea, because then they could get knocked. And if they get knocked, you could ruin the corners. They could get, if you leave them in the sun, tefillin could get ruined. But I don't remember that it says that they have to be covered. It says if they're in a room where you can change a diaper, where if they're in a room where a couple's going to be together. So then in different scenarios, they need different wrappings. Depending on the scenario, you can't put them on the floor. But if you want to leave your tefillin just out on the table, I don't remember right now. I don't remember that it says that that's a problem. I want to look it up. Maybe I'm forgetting, but I don't remember that. I thought you were talking about taking it into the bathroom. Rabbi Abba. So the Gemara tells us about Rabbi Abba, and we have to know that Rabbi Abba was a very common name in the time of the Talmud. Rava, his name was really Rabbi Abba. And then there were a few Rabbi Abbas throughout the Shas also. So Rabbi Abba was a common name. Whenever we encounter it, we have to check out which Rabbi Abba we're talking about. So the Talmud tells us an interesting thing about him. Havaka mishtamet minei de Rabbi Yehuda. He was avoiding Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Abba was avoiding his Rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Abba wanted to make Aliyah, he wanted to come to the land of Israel. And Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that whoever ascends from Babylon to the land of Israel, Rabbi Abba held that he is transgressing the biblical commandment of El Basse, he's transgressing what the prophet told us. Shenemar, as the prophet said, Bavela yuvau, they will be led to Babylon, v'shama yiyu, and they'll remain there, ad yom pokdi otam neum Hashem. till the day that I choose to call them, so says God. So that was Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that a person is not supposed to go from Babylon to Israel. Babylon, they had all the academies, the prophet said they should be there, so Rabbi Yehuda held once they were there, they shouldn't leave. So his Talmud, Rabbi Abba, didn't agree with him. And so Rabbi Abba wanted to go, and he was avoiding his Rebbe. He didn't want to face up and tell him, I'm going with all the other rabbis who hold I should go to Israel. I'm going to Israel. He didn't want to tell his Rebbe that. So he was avoiding him. And he hadn't yet made it out of Babylon. Amar, he said, Ezel, let me go. Veshma mine milta, mebet vada, vehadarapi. Let me go here one more thing from the academy before I go. In Babylon, they had many, many students. They had a huge academies. They had academies that outdated Oxford and all the academies we have today. They were there for, I don't know, over a millennium. They were there for a very long time, from the time of the first exile through the time of the way past the Babylonian Talmud, through the time, I mean, you're talking about approximately a millennium and a half or more. So, They had their academies there, and he said, let me go learn by the Beis Medrash something before I leave. So he was going to Israel, and he couldn't part from the Beis Medrash. He said, let me go one more time, let me hear one more thing. Azal, he went to the Beis Medrash. Ashkechei Letana, he found the one who was teaching the Mishnah. The Tana was the person who had a great memory. He was like the tape recorder. He'd repeat the Mishnayot. So he was called the Tana, the Shone, the one who could rattle off Mishnayos. He wasn't always very learned, but he had a good memory. So he found the one who was quoting Mishnayot, Diktani Kamed Rav Yehuda, that he quoted the following Mishnah or Braisa in front of Rav Yehuda. And he said as follows, Hayah omed batvila, if someone was standing in prayer, venit atesh, and he passed air, mamtin, so now he's not supposed to do that in the middle of prayer, but if it happens, then he should pause, achich le'aruach, till the smell passes, and then he could continue his prayer. Now, we have to know, this is something that people sometimes err in. It's prohibited to pass air when a person is wearing tefillin. A person must, if he can't contain himself, he can't put on tefillin. Now, look, he cannot pass air when he's wearing tefillin. Why don't we let a minor wear tefillin? Because we say, for a minor, it's difficult to contain himself. Once a person is bar mitzvah, we trust him that he'll be able to keep his body clean. Guf naki, a clean body. What does that mean? He won't pass air when he's wearing tefillin. If a person has a bad stomach, so he should put on tefillin just for Shema, for Shemona Esrei, for the blessings of Shema and Shemona Esrei. We put him on for the minimum amount of time, because if a person who cannot do that much, so he should just put him on and take him off. If he can't put him on even for 5 seconds without being certain that he will keep a clean body, then he's potter. He can't put on tefillin that day. But you cannot put on tefillin and pass it. If we're standing in Shacharis in the Beis Medrash and there's a bad smell, so someone doesn't know that halacha. Because we're talking about in Shemona Esrei, when it's also wrong. It's also wrong for it to happen during Shemona Esrei. That's also a problem, and it's not respectful. But with tefillin on, it's even worse. So the halacha that he learned was that if a person was there, he hears the Tana quoting before Rabbi Yehuda the following quote, if someone was standing in prayer, and he passes air, so he has to pause in his prayer till the smell passes, and then he could pray again. Now, the truth is that this is relevant not only to the one who passed there, but also to everyone around him. Anyone who smells it cannot continue their prayer. When it comes to learning Torah, you could continue learning Torah. When it comes to prayer, you can't continue praying. So everyone has to pause. That's halacha also that people don't know. Technically, the second there's a bad smell, someone caused there to be a bad smell. We have to wait till it passes, then we could continue.
Could this be any kind of bad smell? If a garbage truck passes by.
So that we didn't get to. That's a different halacha. We have levels of bad smells. Meaning, halacha quantifies feces, human feces that were used for tanning. There are levels of bad smell. Depends which animal. Certain animals, we say their feces don't constitute a bad enough smell. You could pray right next to them. Other animals, the halacha quantifies. And it gives us a picture. Once a child is old enough to eat a certain amount of oatmeal or grains within a certain amount of time. We say that his digestive system has developed enough, which is usually about 2-3 years old, or even less. So he says that even 1 year old, we say his digestive system has developed enough that his feces give off a bad smell. A child that's a half a year old that's still eating formula, so then their feces, we say, even though they don't smell good, but that's not considered a bad smell. That's how they, so the halacha quantifies, and then
once you get off nursing, that's when it.
It's not enough to get off nursing. It has to be that he eats a certain amount of grain within a certain amount of time. We didn't get to that gemara here. Then Yaakov, I don't think, quotes that. It's a gemara here in Brachos.
What about a sheritza?
What about a sheritza?
I think use the bathroom and see they still smell. You want to see the blood? I mean, like if I walk out of the bathroom, I still smell it or something like that. Do I need to walk away from it so I don't smell it?
I don't know.
Or is that like not considered a prayer?
No, that is considered a prayer. I think you would have to walk away far enough. We have a difference between a reach rashi yesh lo ikar ve reach rashi in lo ikar, a bad smell that has a source and a bad smell that doesn't have a source. Technically, the smell that you smell when you leave a bathroom had a source, but that source was wiped away with the water, it was flushed away. So that, I think, would constitute a reach rashi yesh lo ikar. I have to check, but I think so. It had a source. The source was wiped away, right? But the smell comes from something that was here. And it's just like if you had human feces. Someone walked by with human feces, right? So then we'd say you have to distance yourself 4 footsteps from where the smell ends. The only reason I'm uncertain is because right now there's no source for that smell. It's a smell of something that's already gone. It's flushed down the toilet. I have to check. I don't want to give you an approximate answer. I have to check.
What if somebody like doesn't have a sense of smell for you?
Doesn't matter. Totally. A person that has no sense of smell goes by what other people would smell.
Well, I mean, let's say there's really no one else around. I mean, and there would, like, you know, you just don't know if there's a smell.
So he can't help it.
So then you're not at fault in that case.
He does the best he can. What can he do? Yeah, if it's a place where he could anticipate there's a bad smell. So he shouldn't do anything there.
That's what Sparty said to Beckham.
Well, halakhically we say you could cover up a bad smell if you want to. You could spray another smell there, and then that's good. Like the aerosols, the second you don't spray it, that's fine. In Chazal's time, they used to burn incense. Yeah, but it's not enough that you put incense in your nose. You have to cover up the smell around you. Okay, back to the Enya. So if the Tana said like this, if a person did pass air during prayer, he has to pause till the smell passes, and then he could continue his prayer. Others say, if someone was standing in prayer and he feels he's not going to be able to contain himself, he's going to pass air, he should take 4 footsteps back, and then he passes there, he waits till the smell passes, then he returns to his place and continues his prayer. And he says, Ribono Shlolam, Master of the World, you created us, apertures, openings, and pathways, chalulim, or more like pipes. You created us.
Referring to like his digestive tract?
You created us with a digestive system. Galuy v'yodo lefanecha. You know, it's revealed before you, you know that when we're alive, you know our shame, you know our disgrace, you know that this is the way we live, and ultimately we're going to be vermin, we're going to be worms, and this is the way you created us. And then he could continue Shmoneh Esrei from where he paused. So Rabbi Abba said to if I'd only have come to hear this, that's enough. I learned an important halacha, and that was reason enough to come back to the Beis Medrash before I leave. Now, what's he saying? We don't do this. You never see someone taking 4 footsteps back in the middle of the Shmoneh Esrei and then going back and continuing his prayer.
Well, wouldn't that be embarrassing for the person?
Because most people are embarrassed, right? So this halacha basically we don't do anymore. But technically, a person shouldn't pass air during prayer. If he sees he won't be able to contain himself, let him.
Basically, before shacharit, you should relieve yourself.
Right. Logically, so before each prayer, a person
should
go to the bathroom.
You should pass
before each prayer. But if it happened, like the Gemara is saying here, so what he's saying is basically an apology. He's saying, God, you know you created me human, and it's not right what I did, but this is the way you created me. I have a body, and I wasn't able to contain myself. I'm sorry, it was wrong of me. Basically, it's an apology. That's what it is. Not a blessing over what happened, but rather it's an apology before he goes back to his prayer. Yeah?
Now, what's the policy on, for example, a person didn't have to relieve himself before the prayer started, so and he knows he has to relieve himself, and he only hold it for so long, should he stop praying, relieve himself, you know, be properly washed, and then go back to praying, or what should he do?
Let's start again. A person's supposed to relieve himself before each prayer. Person is supposed to check and make sure that he's clean before every prayer. Shachris min chamayr. Let's say a person did that and then he is halfway through Shachris and he's holding by Shema and he feels like he's going to have to go. So the main point is that by Shemona Esrei, a person shouldn't have to relieve himself. The idea is that a person have a clean body and be focused. He shouldn't have to worry about, do I have to go, or he's holding himself back and he can't focus on his prayer during Shemona Esrei. So Chazal said a person should relieve himself before prayer so he can focus on the prayer. But the main point is the Shemona Esrei. So anytime before Shemona Esrei, if a person thinks he might have to go again during Shemona Esrei, so he should pause his prayer, take off his tefillin, go to the bathroom. If it's at a point like before Baruch Shamar where he can make a blessing, he'll make Dasher Yatzar, wash his hands, make Dasher Yatzar, put on his talus again and tefillin, and then continue his prayer. If it's after the Baruch Shamar, so he cannot break in his prayer, he can't talk, he can't say anything else, so he also cannot make Dasher Yatzar. So he'll go to the bathroom, wash his hands, finish the prayer, put back on the talus and tefillin and finish the prayer, and then after the prayer he'll make Dasher Yatzar for what he went in the middle of prayer. Now in the middle of Shemona Esrei he can't go to the bathroom. A guy has to make sure that he won't have to go before Shemona Esrei, and that's so important that the halacha says that it's better if a person sees that by going to the bathroom he will miss Tfilah B'Tzibur. The everyone's going to hit Shemona Esrei and he's going to be in the bathroom, and then by the time he gets out he'll have missed Shemona Esrei with the congregation. The halacha says even so, it's better to pray a clean prayer even though you're not with the Tzibur than to pray a prayer where every minute you feel like, gee, I really got to go, and you're praying Tfilah B'Tzibur. Most people do not know this halacha. Proof of the pudding is that the bathrooms are readily available before Shacharis, Mincha, and Maariv. So people don't know this halacha everywhere you go. But that's not halacha. Yeah.
What if a person burps during the prayer? Is that allowed?
It's considered disrespectful, but sometimes a person can't contain themselves, so what can he do?
It's the same as letting air out?
No, it's not the same. It's more lenient. But again, a person should put his hand over his mouth and try to do it quietly. That's quoted in halacha.
Yeah. Can't disturb others.
Not only as far as others, but as far as respect towards heaven. He's standing in shul. He's supposed to view himself standing before God. If you think about it, it's pretty amazing that we have three times a day that we pause and we stand and speak to our Creator. It's supposed to give us perspective on our day.
I have another question. Let's just say we're praying in a shul. All of a sudden a pigeon comes in and just shits right on the floor. I mean, it happens. You know, it happened in India in my shul. So what are we supposed to do in that case?
Nothing.
Nothing, it's all right.
Yeah, we said that different feces have different halachos, and pigeons don't have much of a smell, so that's okay.
What if he crept on the canter or something?
then the rabbi will have to decide what to do, the rabbi or the canter.
He might just keep cantillating, like, as if nothing had happened. That'd be kind of weird.
The Talmud discusses that in the temple they had special contraptions to ensure that the birds didn't come to the temple, because sometimes they would sit on the stoop on the top of the temple and then they'd really relieve themselves over there. So, but today, I don't know, it shouldn't be such an issue because most of our shuls are closed.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be an issue. Tanya kavatei de Rav Chisda. So now we have a Tanakh quote like Rav Chisda, Hayam alech ben botom tunafot. If someone was going in areas where it's filthy. So he's walking around in the dumps. He shouldn't read Shema. You don't read Shema where you have people going to the bathroom on the side, you're in the subway and there are puddles all around you and who knows what's in those puddles. So The halacha is that's not a place to read Shema. Not only that, but let's say you were reading and you end up, you find yourself as you're reading Shema, you're on your way to a mitzvah. They tell you, you're going to free Pollard. You're going to go to the White House and now you can get in and free Pollard. So you've got to go. You start going and you say, oh, I'm not going to make it before the reading of Shema. So you start reading Shema. So you do like you should. You stop for the first parsha. You stand there, you focus. The first pasuk, you don't move. And the first parsha, you're quiet. You say the parsha and you focus. And then you keep going. You got to go to your mitzvah. So you're going to the mitzvah and you're saying Shema as you're going. You're in the middle of Shema and suddenly you find yourself in the subway and there are puddles all around you from who knows what. And they definitely look like they might be human. Yeah. So if he was Koreu Ba, if he was reading Shema and he comes to the place, Posek. He has to pause his Shema till he passes that area. Lo pasach mai. What happens if he didn't pause? Amar Mishal Shabred Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shar Shua quoted Rabbi Shua ben Levi. You know, Rabbi Shua ben Levi made it to the Garden of Eden alive. Alava katub umer, about him the verse says, V'gamanin tat lehem chukim lo tovim u'mishpatim b'lichyu v'hem. I gave them laws that weren't good for them. And I gave them a system that won't give them life. Because ordinarily reading Shema gives a person longevity, but not if he's reading it in a place where he shouldn't. Ravasi amar, Ravasi says, Hoy moshe avon b'chavle hashav. Woe to those that pull sin onto themselves by worthless rope. Why did he have to get a sin out of this? Here he has a mitzvah. He could read Shema and get a biblical mitzvah, and instead he causes himself sin by reading it in a prohibited area. Avada barahava amar mehacha. Avada barahava says the verse to quote is this. Ki dvar Hashem bazal. This person desecrated God's word. God gives him a mitzvah to read Shema, and he desecrated it by saying it there. Ve'im pasach, but if he did pause from reading Shema till he passed the location where it was improper, maschao, what are his wages? Amar Rabbi Abu, alav ha-ketuv omer, v'advar hazeh tarichu yamim. Rabbi Abu said, and in this word, you will have longevity. What's this word? That's the word of Shema, when a person knows when to say Shema, and when to pause, to wait till he continues his Shema, then he'll have longevity, and that's this person who knew to pause when he hit the area where he's not allowed to reach Shema. Yeah?
Oh, Rabbi, what if there's some stench that's coming from something like grains or rotting vegetables?
So that we have to learn the laws of stenches. The Talmud gives us many examples to give us a gauge of what's considered a very foul smell and what's not. So we have to learn that. I'm not familiar with the smells you're talking about, so I don't know. Even if I would be familiar, I don't know enough how to gauge what's right. A bad smell and a good smell and not a bad smell. Yeah.
What if you're very poor and you live in an area where your bathroom isn't closed off from the rest of your living quarters?
So that, you know, you guys are focusing on area which we really we have pages in the Talmud that discuss it. In their days, they all had a potty at home. At night, they didn't go out to the outhouse. They made in the potty at home. So the halacha discusses how you cover it up and what you have to do, etc. The question is also a person that has a cell. And in his cell, they give him a little hole, and that's where he's got to go to the bathroom. And he doesn't have a bathroom to go to. So all this is relevant, halachically, right? I mean, a person rents a hotel room, maybe in India, I don't know where, but sometimes they're going to give him a hotel room where the bathroom is really in the corner. It's a little hole in the corner. Right? So then the question is, what does he do? So ideally, if he could cover everything up, and there shouldn't... He has to cover it up that he can't see it. Ideally, he should cover it up where he can't smell it either. And then it's okay.
Oh, yeah, burying your excrement, the thing that they talk about.
It's in the Torah, yeah. The Torah says you should bury.
God says, I dwell among you and you should be home.
Right, that's the source for all this. The source for all this discussion is that those verses that God says, where I'm present, your excrement shouldn't be revealed. So from that we derive that we cannot discuss things that are godly. We can't make blessings or prayers or learn Torah where there's excrement revealed, right? And this brings us to the beginning of the fourth chapter. Itma, we have a halachic quote. Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina Amar, Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina taught filot, the prayers of Shachrit, Arvit, Shachrit, Minchan, Arvit, Avot Tiknum. The patriarchs, they instituted the prayers. And it's easy to remember. You take the second letter of each one's name. Avraham, the second letter is a Beis. He instituted the prayer of the Boker, Beis, the morning prayer of Shachrit. Yitzchak, the second letter is Tzadi. He instituted the prayer of the Tzohorayim, the afternoon, that's Mincha. You know how to use this pen? Yeah, Yaakov, the second letter is Ein, so he instituted the prayer of Arvit, the evening prayer, the Erev. So the forefathers, they instituted the prayer. Rabbi Shua ben Levi amar, Tfilot keneged tminim tiknum. Rabbi Shua ben Levi taught that the prayers were instituted corresponding to the steady sacrifices.
Can you just mention those three words?
Avraham, that's Abraham. The second letter is Beis, and that's Boker, the prayer of the morning.
B-O-K-H-E-R, something like Boker.
Yeah.
Boker, okay.
Yitzchak.
Right, Yitzchak.
That's Tzoharayim.
Wait,
what is that? Tzadi of Yitzchak. Yud Tzadi Chet Kuf.
Okay.
Is Tzoharayim, the afternoon prayer.
So
ho si T S O H O R A Y I M.
T S O H O R A Y I M. Y I N. Okay.
M. Tzoharayim.
Oh yeah, okay. That's complicated. And
Tzohar is a light. Tzoharayim are the like the twilights, the afternoon lights. Yeah. And Yaakov is Erev, the evening. That's Yaakov. Or Arvit. Now we had two steady sacrifices, every morning and every afternoon. They were brought every day of the year, including Yom Kippur, including Shabbos, and that was called the Tamid Shel Shachar and Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim. These two sacrifices were representative of all of the Jewish people. And Rabbi Shua ben Levi says the prayers correspond to those set sacrifices. What about the evening prayer? So that we'll get to Bezrat Hashem. And Bezrat Hashem, next week, we'll pick up over here, where the Gemara is going to discuss who instituted what. So let's review what we saw today. We began by discussing that the hair is one of the things that's considered a modest thing that's supposed to be only revealed between a husband and his wife. We went on to discuss that a person who hangs his tefillin, his life should be hung. We went on to discuss Rabbi Abba, who was avoiding Rabbi Yehuda because he wanted to go to the land of Israel. And then he went to the academy and he heard one thing, that a person who passed air during prayer, he has to wait till the air passes. And then when he goes back to prayer, then he could go back to prayer. And others say that if he is standing in prayer and he sees that he's going to have to pass air, he should take 4 footsteps back, pass air, and wait till the air passes. And then He makes an apology. God, you created us with holes, with apertures, with pathways, and you know our shame in our life, and in our death we're all vermin. And after apologizing, he returns to his prayer, and Rabbi Abba was happy he came to hear that last quote. We had a halachic quote in the name of Rav Chisda, that if someone's going through area that's filthy, he shouldn't read Shema, and if he does read, he has to pause, and if he doesn't pause, then he's causing himself sin by something that should be a mitzvah, by saying it in those areas. And if he pauses, then he's promised that that'll help him with regard to longevity. And now we begin the fourth chapter that Rav Yosef Reb Chanina taught us, that the prayers of Shmon Esrei correspond, the forefathers instituted them, and Rabbi Shua ben Levi taught that they correspond to the Tamid sacrifices. And this is the Zachem where we'll pick up next week.
So Erev means light.